All right, Acts chapter 21. So Paul is returning from his third missionary journey, and we have followed him all across this land. One was asking before class about the route that he took and the way he decided to come back. We see that he does travel some through the land, but he evidently tries to go back by sea. Remember, he's trying to get back to Jerusalem as fast as he can. And he also has a treasury with him collected from brethren all over Asia and Macedonia that they might help those Christians in Jerusalem that were poor and destitute. And so he travels back by sea. We've seen along the way where he stopped at Tyre or Ptolemais or Caesarea that he had loving disciples encourage him not to go because they are aware of what's going to happen to Paul. And Paul is aware of what's going to happen to Paul. And he is determined to go regardless because it's the will of God for him. And so we see in Acts 21, that's what they left off saying after he would not be persuaded. They stopped trying to persuade him, saying then, the will of the Lord be done. And that's ultimately needs to be our prayer for all things as well. We have requests. We have desires. Many, if not most of them, are selfish because that's what we want, right? We want a happy life. We want our children to have a happy life. We want our grandchildren to have a happy life. We want these things for our benefit and our enjoyment. But we also have to recognize that the Lord's will must be done. And so often we are given moments of hardship to shine His glory because that's when it's most evident, not when everything's just going great. So they recognize that. They say this is what the will of the Lord needs to be done. And so we're praying that it will be done and accomplished through Paul. So verse 15 is where we'll pick up this morning, Acts 21, 15. And after those days, we packed and went up to Jerusalem. Individuals always go up to Jerusalem, even though you look at the map and you say, well, that looks like it's going down, right? Well, that's going south, but everyone goes up in the Bible to Jerusalem because of the elevation. The geography of it all, the way it's the topography, I should say, the way it's set, you are traveling up in elevation to get to Jerusalem. So when anyone ever would leave Jerusalem, they went down from Jerusalem. Verse 16, also some of the disciples from Caesarea went with us, and brought with them a certain Manasen of Cyprus, an early disciple with whom we were to lodge. I forgot. I did something a little different today. I went ahead and put the text on the slide. I realized that there's some that have trouble reading fine print, so I thought maybe up here it might be a benefit to them. So verse 16, some of the disciples from Cyprus decided to also tag along, to go along with the Apostle Paul and to accompany him. And they brought with them a certain Mason, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that, of Cyprus, an early disciple. So that means he had been a Christian for a long, long time. And they were to lodge, we were to lodge with. And so evidently he had property over there. Verse 17, when we had come to Jerusalem, the brethren received us gladly. On the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. So here we have now Paul coming to the end of his journey. And we see that the brethren are really happy to see Paul. Not just Paul, but us. So Luke's included in that group. And I believe a list of 9 different traveling companions and messengers of the various churches of the Gentiles. All of them were together. Some of them from Caesarea. And then we see that Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. And when he had greeted them, he told them in detail those things which God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. So here Paul now is meeting with James and also the elders who are present with James. James we understand to be the brother of the Lord. The other James the apostle had died by the sword. And so here they're all together. And most likely this is the time in which Paul then delivers that collection to the elders that they might be able to distribute it among the brethren. And they're all happy. They're just thankful to be together. They're greeting one another. And then Paul begins to go in detail those things which he had done among the Gentiles. So think about some of the things that he would have been able to share with them. He would have been able to talk about his work there in Ephesus, Acts chapter 19, and how he met individuals there that had some knowledge of the Lord but were only baptized in the baptism of John. And so he taught them the way more accurately, and he baptized them in the name of the Lord, and the church began there. And he could have talked about how he was there for a couple of years and was in the school of Tyrannus, reasoning daily with individuals that would come and go, and with the disciples as well. He could talk about how there was times where Jewish exorcists tried to exorcise demons by the name of Jesus, and it didn't work. They were beaten to a bloody pulp. But that, in the end, actually brought more people to Jesus as they recognized that you need to be on his side, not just simply calling by his name. And so fear fell on all, and the name of the Lord is magnified. And we see the result of that was that they brought these books of magic and they burned them all. We mentioned how many millions of dollars that would have been. So we could have shared all this tremendous news with them in this discussion. He could have talked about the riot at Ephesus, you know, and how deadly it became for him to remain in Ephesus. And so he had to escape and to go further on his journeys. Went to Macedonia, to Greece, to Berea, Troas, Philippi, all these areas that he went, returning back, collecting money for the needy brethren in Jerusalem. And then his final discussion with the elders at Ephesus and how hard it was to leave them, but to tell them all his warning. He didn't want it to be for naught, that they would take these words and that they would believe these words, incorporate these words, and that they would preserve the church there. He could talk about his returning back to Jerusalem and all the brethren that he saw and all of the hugs and the tearful goodbyes and the things that were prophesied about him from the Holy Spirit, what he would face in Jerusalem. So that just kind of gives you a little nutshell of some of the things that he might have discussed. Verse 19 says he told in detail those things. So most likely he shared what we shared and much, much more, because he lived those things. He would have the details of those things. Comments, questions so far? Okay, it's pretty straightforward, just a historical narrative so far. Verse 20, "And when they heard it, they glorified the Lord. And they said to him, 'You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews there are who have believed, and they all are zealous for the law.'" So first thing they do when they hear this is they glorify the Lord. God be glorified. Glory to the Lord. This is wonderful news. They're so very thankful of what they've heard of many believers coming to the Lord. And of course, to see the evidence of their love for Jewish brethren whom they had never met. And yet it was there. It was evident that they cared for them in that collection. So they glorified God in this. But then they turned their attention to something that has been bothering them, you can see, probably for some time. And that's often how it is with us, you know, when we have to meet with somebody. Very quickly to the surface comes a thing that has been on our minds, bothering us. Because their glory in the Lord is not given in detail, but their concern is shared next with Paul, and we see that Luke records that. And they say, "You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews there are who have believed." Myriads, from what I understand in my reading, is that this would refer to a number of 10,000 or greater. And certainly it must have been greater if you think about how much time has passed since Acts chapter 2. And the word of the Lord certainly would have had more time to have spread. He says there's many of these Jews who have believed. So these are Christians. But he shares their nationality, right? This is their background. This is where they've come from. And then he says they're all zealous for the law. Now, zealous for the law means zealous for the law. They really respected the law and believed in the law. And that's okay. Because there is a instance in where it is acceptable to be zealous for your heritage and your background and who you are and where you came from. But then there's an overzealousness, which I believe is what the Judaizing teachers had, where unless you keep the law of Moses, you cannot be saved. So in studying this, that's where I'm landing here, is that they're not in this overzealousness, but in the zeal for the law. Because these individuals had believed in Jesus Christ, and James and the other elders understood the law in relation to the gospel. In fact, in Acts chapter 15, they had written a letter about Gentile brethren should not be troubled to keep the observances of the law. But here among Jewish brethren, many of them had not worked on a Sabbath most all their life. And it's okay. They don't have to, now that they're Christians, start working on a Sunday or a Saturday, excuse me. That observance is just fine. Most hadn't ate pork their life. Now that they're Christians, they don't have to have the hot dog. Right? That's fine for them not to take of pork. So there's a lot of things that they did nationally that are absolutely fine if they want to continue to practice those things. But a rumor has been spread about Paul that Paul has made it like a personal vendetta of his to get people to forsake Moses. In essence, teaching that the law of Moses was bad. And that's the rumor that James and the elders are hoping to expose as wrong. It wasn't true. Okay. Think about what Paul said in Romans chapter 7. Romans 7 and verse 7. He says, "What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not." So in that one statement right there, he shows that the law of Moses, the old law, is not sinful. In fact, he goes on to say, "On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, 'You shall not covet.'" So it had a way of informing him of what sin was. So the law was good. In fact, he goes on to say that in verse 12, "Therefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy and just and good." But the question of, is it binding today, is a different question, right? Is it something that we must observe to please God today? Well, the answer to that, is, of course, is no. But we learn a lot of great truths about God from the old covenant. But that wasn't the rumor that was spread about Paul. You look back there in Acts 21 and verse 21, it says, "But they have been informed about you that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children nor walk according to the customs." So you have kind of a mix of some half-truth with this, and that's often what Satan does his work best, right? Not in flat-out error or lie, but a little mix of both. And the rumor has spread. Obviously, it had really bothered the elders at Jerusalem. There was one man who once named his horse, his racehorse, Rumors. And they asked him, why'd you name your racehorse Rumors? He said, because rumors travel really fast. So he thought that was the appropriate name for a racehorse. It's a sad reality that that often is the case, right? Undocumented rumors spread as slander so as to affect the influence of that person that's being rumored against. And that's what happened to Paul. And Satan was most glad to help out. And the elders there at Jerusalem said, there is just tens of thousands of Christians here that are Jewish in nature. And this is what they've heard about you. And we know where we all stand. Because he goes on to say right down here, but concerning the Gentiles who believe, we have written and decided that they should observe no such thing except that they should keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from things strangled, from sexual immorality. That's Acts 15, right? So they're not saying, now we need to capitulate and placate these Jews that believe and just go ahead and do something that will make them feel that the law of Moses is still binding today. Now, we know what we believe and what we teach about that. In fact, we wrote a letter to all the Gentile churches about that. So they understand where they stand, where Paul stands, where the truth stands in regards to the relation of the law of Moses and the gospel. So their problem is, how can we to stifle this rumor, put it to an end, and keep harmony in the church? So here's the solution. What then, verse 22? The assembly must certainly meet, for they will hear that you have come. Therefore, do what we tell you. We have four men who have taken a vow. Take them and be purified with them, and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads, and that all may know that those things of which they were informed concerning you are nothing, but that you yourselves also walk orderly and keep the law. So here was their solution to the rumor problem. This is a way where you can allow your actions to speak louder than your words. You know, because you can get up there and say what you said in Romans 7. Is the law of sin? Certainly not. But there may be some of those Jews that have heard the rumors and saying, hey, he's just saying what we want to hear and saying to a different audience what they want to hear. So here's what you should do. We've got four men who've taken this vow. It seems to indicate it's the Nazarite vow. And the Nazarite vow is a voluntary vow. One didn't have to do that. They were not bound by the law of Moses to take this vow. It's voluntary. Part of their heritage again. They've chosen this. They've all also chosen to end the vow at this same time, so that it will provide us an opportunity to show that you are not telling people to forsake their national heritage. You have this collection. Use some of it to pay for the expenses at the temple that they might complete this vow process. And there it would show others that you're not against the Jews as a nation, you yourself being one. So this is kind of tantamount to, and this is the best way to understand it, civilly speaking, we have various observances in our country. Memorial Day just more recently. 4th of July is coming. You know, these are important dates to us as Americans, right? And it would be perceived as anti-American to say, well, I'm against the 4th of July. I don't think anyone should observe Memorial Day. Well, that would leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mind. Well, you are a citizen of this country, aren't you? You're one of us. You belong, right? What's the matter with you? Well, that's kind of how things are seen here with Paul and these aspects of the law. It wasn't that it was binding for salvation, but to show that he wasn't against their heritage. The thing that makes it difficult for us sometimes is that with us, civil and religious are often very separated. They kind of converge a little bit in Christmas time and Easter, right? But for the most part, we understand that there's secular observances of those holidays too. But for the Jews, that was all kind of combined. You know, where one started and the other one ended, it's hard to tell sometimes. But that's what the rumor was for Paul. Forsake it all. You're not an American, you know. So let's put those rumors to death, and here's what you should do. All right, I've talked a long time. Any questions about any of that?
I think the laws, we know with the exception of the Sabbath day, it was the traditions that the Jews had created on their own that Christ condemned so much. And I think that may be an issue with some of the background comments here.
Possibly, yes, possibly so. Anybody else? Yes.
In verse 27, it says, but when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd. Thinking those were the Jews that were like in Ephesus and Galatia, mm-hmm. but they were so opposed to Paul at that time when he was preaching the gospel. But Paul would always start the synagogue. And in doing so, he would not work on the Sabbath because he wanted to be able to go and preach to the Jews first. So in a way, he was observing also their traditions, you know, and their customs. And he was not, being disrespectful to their beliefs.
Right.
He will start from there. But at the same time, I'm sure that they were upset because they would see him mingling with the Gentiles as well.
Right.
But these Jews that brought out this crowd to a gospel.
Right.
They hated Paul.
I think this verse right here applies, and I meant to read it earlier, 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9, 19 and following. It says, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those who were under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law towards God, but under law towards Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake. So Paul always thought about what was the most advantageous for the gospel's sake. And he recognized that when there was various customs within a land, to adapt yourself to those customs so that you wouldn't have this stumbling block of offense before you even get a chance to share the gospel with others. And so, as long as it didn't violate the law of God, and that's what he specifies there. Was it against the law of God to circumcise? No. Paul said, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing. So either way, it would have been fine. But we violate the law of God when we say it must be done in order to be saved. You know, when we insert commandments into the new covenant, that's when it begins to violate the will of God. You know, I was talking a little bit about this with Toby the other day, and he made a good observation. You know, when Justin went to India and he shared with us some of the things that they did over in India, their various traditions and customs. As long as they are not violating God's will, it's okay. In fact, it's beneficial if he adapts some of those and appreciates and pays honor to some of those various customs and traditions, so that he might have a great opening to share with the gospel with those individuals. Some of you may notice the subway here in town, it's owned by some Indian folks. And real nice. Al and Sonny are their names. And I've talked with them some. They're from India, and they've been here a year or so, and the parts that they've been, Justin's been, so we've had some, you know, little discussions about things, Hinduism, and I asked them about Mother's Day. I was curious, do you guys celebrate Mother's Day over there? Say, oh yes, we sure do something. So, you know, you learn some of the customs that maybe you have in common, and you could begin to have an opening to show with them that you, while you are different as a Christian, it's not worlds different, you know, that you have a opportunity to begin to share with them why it is that you believe faith should be in Jesus and not in multiple gods. So that's how Paul was, wherever he was. As long as it didn't violate God's law, I'm going to adapt myself to them. Miss Nancy, you have a comment? Mm-hmm.
He's been on the side where the Jews are right now.
Zealous for the law, right.
He's been there and he understands. I think whenever you've been to a situation, you understand the thinking of it. So to me, he would be one of the very few that would understand how they think of those Jews that they have been there.
Right, right. And we know Paul doesn't push it, doesn't debate against it. And we know Paul's written very strongly already in Galatians that if you're circumcised to keep the law, you've fallen from grace. Paul's made it very clear, you know, I worry about some of you who are turning to another gospel. And the idea was they were incorporating some of the old covenant in the new covenant. So Paul evidently knew that this was not a violation of those things he had said earlier. And so he, like you said, he would know best of both worlds and what would be acceptable and what wouldn't be acceptable. Anybody else? It's a good comments. Brother Ross, sure, go ahead.
He, being a Jew and being a human, he didn't want to destroy them. He wanted to build them up. So in this way, even the weak brethren, he could build up by doing this. But the other side of the coin, he wasn't playing with that not being the law of the day spiritually. Nationally, we can hang out. This is cool. But spiritually, it's a different thing. But he really got down to where they live and say, hey, I'm no different than you are. I'm a Jew too.
Right.
And I respect all of that proceeded before, because Jesus told John, suffer, be so now, for it behooves us to fulfill all righteousness. So that law was good when it was in effect. But you can do those things customarily, nationality, and they can still be fine. But when you take and make them the law of Christ, such as they did with the circumcision, then that won't work.
Right. Absolutely. There's a couple things I want us to get from this. We have to remember, too, that this was a struggle unique to the early church, partially because a lot of the national Jewish heritage was still thriving and working and operating. But that was all going to come to an end in just a few short decades. In AD 70, when the Romans march into Jerusalem and destroy the temple and destroy all the documents of the lineage of Aaron, the priesthood, all of this, that all comes to an end. It all becomes a moot point in the end. You can't do these certain aspects of Judaism anymore, at least not according to the law. Which, of course, if it's not according to the law, then it's really not Judaism. It might be a made-up Judaism, like a lot of Judaism is today. They've made up their own traditions and say this is Judaism, but it's not Old Testament Judaism. It's not biblical Judaism. So these things, it was like a transition period where these things were still working, but God knew that they were going to be coming to a conclusion whether they liked it or not anyway.
Another thing, you still have respect for these things because once upon a time, they were the law.
That's right.
And so he respected that. It's like our parents would say, I don't want you playing cards. That's a devilment to play cards. Well, when I would go to my mom's house, guess what I would restrain myself from doing? Knowing that playing cards is nothing if you're not gambling. But if it was a problem for her, then out of respect, I wouldn't go play. I wouldn't play. My kids wouldn't play. None of us would play. Secular music wouldn't happen, not in her house. So I would have total respect for that because that's what she believed was right in the sight of God. So there was no way I was going to cross that line. It was, and even some of that shaped me even today. You know, secular music, you can take it or leave it. It could be really a sinful thing if you're not listening to the right things. It was beautiful in that way. So that's the same thing Paul was doing. The law of God, once upon a time, the Old Testament was a law of the day. You still need to have a little respect when you're dealing with that, even though it's obsolete now. It's off the scene, but still, that's what Abraham, that's what Moses, all of them, under the law of God and the whole, and we still have to have respect for that, just like it's wise for children to have respect for the parents' rule, even though you got grown and you know it ain't nothing to that. You know, it's nothing to playing cards if you're not gambling. If you're gambling, then it's sin, it's wrong, but just play a hand of cards. Anybody can do that, but I don't want you having it. So out of respect, I wouldn't even think about it.
Right. And you would lose all opportunity to convert them if you'd say, hey, let's start, you know, I've learned this new liberty. You know, it's right. You learn the custom and you say, I respect that. And that's being wise. It's like the Lord said, being wise as serpents and gentle as doves. Good comments. Anybody else? Okay, the other part I want to talk about, and maybe where we spend the rest of our time, is this, is the power of rumors and how deadly they can be. So here you have Paul having to do this simply because there was this rumor that existed. Right? If they understood Paul's words accurately and understood the truth of the gospel accurately, there'd be no need for this to take place. So because of the rumors, and Paul looking to have an advantage among his brethren, or I should say just be able to be received by some of his brethren, be understood accurately and not misrepresented by his brethren, he has to go through this. Now because he has to go through this, this is ultimately what's going to land him in chains and be put in prison the rest of the book of Acts. Now, I'm sure the Jewish brethren didn't think that by us doing this, this is what's going to be the tipping of the scales to put Paul into prison. But I just want us to see that how deadly rumors can be and how much they can harm the body of Christ. Because if it did this to the apostle Paul, then it can do it